The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Here at the Black Information Network, we know how important it is for you to start your week off energized, engaged, and enlightened. There are always major stories that break over the weekend, and we feel you should know about the ones we are talking about today. So stay tuned for our weekend recap, featuring the author of the book, Trap History, and the executive editor of Atlanta Daily World, Mr. A.R. Shaw. This is the Black Information Network Daily Podcast, and I'm your host, Ramses Ja. All right, Mr. A.R. Shaw, welcome back to the show. It's been a while, man. How have you been?
Man, a lot has taken place since we last got a chance to catch up. But
yeah, tell me about it.
Yeah, man. It's been a lot of good things that's happened. We recently completed an interview with NBA Hall of Famer, All-Star Chris Webber, who released the book, By God's Grace.
Okay.
And got an opportunity. He spoke about, you know, his time with the Fab Five in Michigan, you know, some of the, the disconnect between college athletes not getting paid versus, you know, the colleges using their brands to further the institution. Yeah. He talked about, you know, growing up in Michigan, you know, Detroit. He even talked about Angel Reese and some of the backlash that she's facing. So it's an interview that's going to be it's going to be live this week on Atlanta Daily World and Real Times Media Properties.
Okay, it's coming out. Okay, cool. So do me a favor, before we move on, let's let everybody know one more time where they can get that interview, and then we'll of course tag your social media and everything at the end.
Yes, definitely. So you can catch the entire video interview of Chris Webber at Atlanta Daily World and Real Time Media Properties, Michigan Chronicle to the Chicago Defender, and New Pittsburgh Courier. You can catch that this week.
All right, fantastic. Okay, well, let's get to the news. First up, this comes from The Hill. Indiana State University denounces students' racist TikTok about Beyonce. After a student's racist TikTok video about Beyonce and her new album went viral, the school released a message denouncing it. Quote, racism, hate speech, and discrimination of any kind is deplorable and in direct contradiction of Indiana State's mission, vision, and values, University President Deborah Curtis said in a statement Thursday. She goes on to say the student's comments in the video in no way represent the ideals and goals of Indiana State University. So I'm going to share a bit about what was said in the video. The person in the video says, quote, I'm sorry, but if you're black, you're not country. I don't care. I know you were raised in the country or your grandparents were, I guess, but they was picking. They wasn't planting. Just keep that in mind. They wasn't making money. They was getting sold for money. So that's kind of the TikTok video that made its way to the administration at the Indiana State University. Give us your thoughts, you know, on this story when you first heard about it.
Yeah, it's been an interesting thing, of course, with Beyonce releasing her latest album. We've seen a lot of backlash from individuals who think that country music doesn't belong to Black people. But, you know, it just shows an abundance of ignorance, because country music derives from Black culture. Mm-hmm. Of course, the banjo comes from Africa. And you know, country music it derives from the blues. And so we have to really call it out. And it's just, you know, unfortunate that, you know, so many individuals who are ignorant and not aware of the history of American music. And it's just, I'm glad that Indiana State University actually spoke out, but it just shows that there's so much more that we have to teach the next generation and people who have so much hate.
Sure. Absolutely. You know, the crazy part about it is that, you know, as you mentioned that country comes from blues and gospel. If you look up, you know, the what would it be? The genealogy or the family tree of the different genres of American music, you'll see that, you know, everything with the exception of, I believe, classical music, has its roots in a slave field somewhere, you know, and the influence of Black people and Black culture in its totality on popular music in this country, it cannot be overstated. And the fact that there are people that don't know about that has really hindered a lot of growth from all of us, to be honest with you, but mostly from non-Black people, because, you know, there's always this push against, you know, Black people, you know, playing rock and roll music, or Black people playing really any type of music, anything that Black people do that's not hip hop or R&B. There's people that push back on it and say, well, why don't you kind of stay in your lane? And they don't acknowledge that. Well, you know, to be fair, these are kind of all our lanes. So that's, I think, why a lot of people push back on ensuring that hip hop is chronicled accurately, you know, and jazz is chronicled accurately. And you know, all the, you know, gospel, all these sorts of things where there are these other players and these other figures in there. But when, you know, when we saw what happened to rock and roll music with Elvis Presley, how rock and roll kind of shifted in the minds of you know, the populace, from being a Black form of art to a white form of art. And then there were other people that were moving into that space that were copying Elvis that were also white. And then, you know, nowadays you think rock and roll music, you think of white people playing guitars. And the truth is, you know, you go back, there are people that laid the groundwork for rock and roll music, and those were all Black people. I appreciate what Beyonce's done, because for better or worse, we're having these conversations, and they are certainly important for us to continue to have, so that, you know, we don't get pigeonholed outside of the scope of our own people's contributions in today's society. So, moving on, our next story comes from Black Enterprise. Civil rights attorney Benjamin Crump is adding author to his impressive resume after signing a 7-figure deal to write a crime novel series. Under a deal with Bantam Books, Bantam will publish the first 2 novels of the series surrounding Bo Lee Cooper, a Black civil rights attorney who, quote, tackles heart-wrenching cases of corruption and injustice while celebrating Black love, joy, and resilience, unquote. Crump celebrated the news on X, formerly known as Twitter, highlighting both novels as being, quote, informed by my decades of courtroom experience and personal revelations with the world, unquote. I'll share his actual tweet. It says, huge news. I'm pleased to announce that I've signed a deal with Bantam Books to author a series of crime novels that center on Bo Lee Cooper, a Black civil rights attorney who tackles cases of corruption and injustice while celebrating Black love and resilience. So, definitely a turn in events and what we have come to associate Ben Crump with. Let's get your thoughts on this.
Yeah, I'm not mad at it. I think when it comes to art, it's good to have these type of stories told from a Black person's point of view. And if you look at, if you think back time, you know, movies and books like A Time to Kill, they were centered around Black culture, but it was from a perspective of white attorneys. Mm-hmm. And so this, you know, I'm interested in you know, reading about, you know, a Black attorney who's fighting for civil rights. And so, like I say, with art, we've seen these stories before from even, I think it was To Kill a Mockingbird. Like, there's so many stories where you see these attorneys, white attorneys, defending, you know, whether it's Black civil rights, and it's from a white person's perspective. And this is good to have a Black perspective about civil rights. And so I'm looking forward to it. You know, kudos to Ben Crump. And let's just hope that it all connects and that it's a good piece of art.
Sure. You know, what's funny is I actually got to spend a little bit of time with Ben Crump. Let's see, it wouldn't have been this past weekend, of course, but the weekend prior, he was in Phoenix. There was a basketball tournament, and there was an adjacent sort of HBCU tournament, and my lawyer is his co-counsel. And, you know, the space where I work, obviously it was meaningful that he and I would finally meet. So, you know, my impression, he's a great guy. You know, he took time to talk to me and everyone that wanted to talk to him. Obviously, he and I really, you know, there was a lot of connective tissue potentially between him and me, but there was a lot of people that just wanted to say thank you, grab a picture, all that sort of stuff. You know, the energy that he had was fantastic. And I, honestly, you know, I don't know that it could have happened to a better person based on what I know. You know, $1 million publishing deal to do something that he clearly enjoys. I think that's fantastic. And another thing that I want to make sure that we appreciate about this moment is that there are talented people in the world, and talented people can travel a very commercial path to financial success, or they can dedicate their talents to making the world a better place. And oftentimes when we look at people who are talented and could make lots of money being the leader of an industry, CEO of a company, when we see them as the CEO of a nonprofit, if they are financially successful or compensated somewhat on the same level of a typical CEO, I think that we've been trained to look at that as like corruption. Like, do-gooders need to be poor in order to be valid. And I've always pushed back against that because I went to business school, and then I went back to business school, and then I went again. You know, I got my master's degree in business management. And I recognize that when a person has developed the skills and has the capacity to lead a movement, lead a company, lead whatever, then they should be compensated accordingly. And if they are fueled by a degree of conviction and they want their efforts to not just bring about new widgets, but also to like impact the quality of life for their fellow humans, that they should not have to give up the wealth that they could create. This is capitalism, and that's the game that everyone plays. You know, I don't love it, but that's the game that everyone plays. And I feel like we lose a lot of talented people to the worst parts of capitalism because we have come to associate do-gooders with poverty. And so anytime there's a do-gooder that fiscally does well for him or herself, I applaud that. And I think that hopefully it will inspire other people who would be do-gooders to do some good instead of selling t-shirts or Nikes or, you know, whatever. This is very much a consumer-based economy and consumer-based planet, if we're being honest. And I don't love that, because the implications of that are often, you know, a few people get really super uber rich and, you know, it costs us the planet and it costs us the quality of life. And so those same talented people that can champion those efforts, if we had a few of them on the other side championing really humanitarian efforts, I think that that the world would be a better place. But again, we often lose them because they're compensated better over there. And it's just this vicious cycle, this dog chasing its tail sort of a thing. So shout out to Ben Crump for being one of the people who does good and also is getting his money. Today's guest is the author of the book, Trap History, and the executive editor of Atlanta Daily World, Mr. A.R. Shaw. All right, next up from the Tallahassee Democrat, Florida is tied for second most mass shootings in the United States in 2024. There have been 9 mass shootings in Florida so far this year, according to the Gun Violence Archive. But that's still better than 2023, which saw 12 mass shootings by the same time, with 7 in January alone. As of April 9th, there have been 103 mass shootings nationwide, compared to 149 by the same time in 2023. Florida is currently tied with Texas for the second most mass shootings in 2024 to date, according to GVA data. California, with much stricter gun laws, is one mass shooting ahead, despite having nearly twice the population of Florida and half again the population of Texas. So let's get your thoughts on how Florida is faring with these mass shootings.
Yeah, Florida seems like it's going backwards in multiple areas.
Yeah.
And gun laws is another one. It's interesting because it's like, even, you know, as you say this about this horrible statistic, last week, a Republican lawmaker, his name is Mike Beltran, mm-hmm. he introduced a bill, House Bill 1619, which would allow for open carry without a license in the state of Florida. So we see this ongoing lack of judgment from lawmakers in the state of Florida when it comes to this. And so there are repercussions to this. And so, you know, unfortunately, people are being caught, innocent lives are being lost because of lawmakers not really doing their due diligence and creating more safety barriers when it comes to gun ownership. And so it's just a lack of understanding, or just a lack of trying to create a barrier between who can own a gun and who can't own a gun. And, you know, we see with this new bill, House Bill 1619, them trying to implement this bill at a time where they lead the nation in mass shooting is just irresponsible.
Yeah. Yeah. Another thing, too, is that I think that we need to really rethink guns in general. I get that the founding fathers said that we have the right to bear arms, but the more life I live, the more I realize that that doesn't necessarily need to be true. One of the things I know is that the reason that that rule was there, that part of the Constitution, was because if we ever needed to pick up arms and take on a tyrannical government, we would be able to do so. So that was the intention behind that part of the, you know, the Bill of Rights. However, guns at this point in time don't make any sense in defending ourselves against a government that has predator drones. Guns have become more advanced. You know, there are machine guns that people have in their homes, and everyone has the right, everyone above a certain age has the right to have one. And there are a good number of people who are not very good at making decisions, and they will make a permanent decision that they cannot unmake, and it affects either their families if they are suicidal and in a bad place, or it can affect other families in the community at large if they are angry, upset, and feel like they are unheard and they want to take it out on the world. And they exercise their right to own a gun, and then they use that gun in the worst possible way imaginable. or, you know, people think that, you know, an argument is, you know, they pull out a gun because they call it self-defense. And, you know, it's the gun that escalates the tension in a given situation or scenario. A gun in and of itself often enough does that. I would guess, I don't have, this is just kind of anecdotal. I would guess, I don't have the actual data here, so please correct me if I'm wrong, if you're listening, but, I would guess that guns are probably used in ways that more people regret than, more often than of the time than people are grateful for. You know, when in the hands of, you know, everyday citizens dealing with everyday problems, I would imagine that there's a lot of people who, you know, even if they were justified in doing so, you know, once the weight of that, dang, I took someone's life because they were trying to steal a bike, you know, like, you know, maybe there's a lot of regret in those type of things. You know, people that commit these like kind of low level property crimes, that, you know, you would survive. You can bounce back from that. You know, the bike that the guy was trying to steal that you killed, you don't even have that bike anymore. You know, what was it really worth? That person could have been having a hard time. Maybe could have been going through a tough season, but our inability to make decisions that are, you know, rational and well thought out in tense moments where we have to react, it's almost literally ready, fire, aim. And everyone having a gun and being, you know, the angel of death in that moment is just not a prudent way to live. And it makes everyone else a little bit more afraid. You know, there was a kid, to share this, there was a kid that brought a gun to my son's school. Maybe that was last week. I had to sit with that. He's at school today. You know, they got him when he was on the bus, and, you know, they dealt with it. But had he not accidentally let someone see it, or, you know, what if someone had not told on him, you know, that gun would have been on the campus, and who knows what would have happened, right? So when I say we have a gun problem, I'm like, that's about as close to knocking on my door as you're going to get. That's my child, my little boy. At his school, he's in the third grade. The school goes to fourth grade. So we definitely have the gun problem in this country. And then, you know, when we look at this story, when you look at, so obviously if California has double the population and basically the same number of mass shootings, as I said, it was one, California had one more mass shooting event than Texas or Florida. So that's basically the same, going from 12 to 13. But California has double the population. I'd argue at that point that stricter gun laws make things safer. And I would ask, you know, what say you about this, Ron DeSantis? So for our final story today, we're going to talk about Rico Wade, who I'm a fan of. Our story comes from Variety. Rico Wade, a member of the pioneering Atlanta-based production trio Organized Noise and a key early Outkast collaborator and a lot of other groups too, has died, according to an Instagram post by his close friend Killer Mike and the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. No cause of death was cited. He was 52 years old. So talk to us about Rico Wade a bit and his influence in Atlanta.
Yeah, definitely. Me being an Atlanta native, I knew a time of in Atlanta when the music industry wasn't thriving. And Rico Wade is one of the individuals who could be credited to helping Atlanta become becoming the epicenter of Black music in America. Mm-hmm. 1991, Outkast, Andre 3000, Big Boy, they auditioned for Rico Wade when they were just teenagers in high school. And Rico Wade, he was able to sign him to a production deal. And he took that deal and he introduced him to L.A. Reid, and the rest is history. Now, Outkast is the biggest selling group in hip hop history. Not only was Wade influential in the careers of Outkast and Goody Mob, but he also, him and his collective, Organized Noise, Ray Murray and Sleepy Brown. They also produced hits for En Vogue and TLC. They produced TLC's biggest hit, Waterfalls, which sold over 15 million records. Yeah. You know, and so you talk about individuals who have been impacted from organizing awards, such as Killer Mike, who won 3 Grammy Awards this year, and Future, who has the number one album. That's Rico Wade's cousin. So there's a lot of ties to Rico Wade, and everyone in Atlanta says that Atlanta wouldn't be Atlanta in terms of music without Rico Wade.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny you mentioned Future because he has the Dungeon Family tattoo on his forearm. So Future is definitely Dungeon Family as well. And there's many, many more groups that we're not discussing. I know that there's, I want to say Cool Breeze. I want to say Witch Doctor. And these are like more Atlanta. They're more known in Atlanta, but they're indeed national acts. It's just from a time that, you know, the South was really making its claim to the epicenter of the hip hop world, that, you know, back when magazines were still very prominent, you would see ads for these groups and other acts. And, you know, these people got their sales too. You know what I mean? These people made their money. They made a name for themselves. And this was all fueled by organized noise, or between organized noise and Dallas Austin and Jermaine Dupri, you know, and I'm sure I'm missing maybe one or two others. That time in Atlanta in the early and the mid 90s, that formative time, that is forever seared in the consciousness of hip hop, and especially in what many people consider to be the golden era of hip hop. So, you know, for folks that don't know exclusively about Rico Wade, I'm a huge fan of Rico Wade. I think Rico Wade is just, he's a producer's producer, right? Once upon a time, I was an aspiring producer, and then I got into DJing and then radio and all that stuff. But anyway, I implore you to try to find, I don't know if it's still available, but there's a movie, a documentary called The Art of Organized Noise. And Organized Noise is spelled like the name of the group, Organized Noise. So noise has a Z, not an S. The Art of Organized Noise. If you can find that, do yourself a favor and learn about Outkast. Learn about, primarily about Organized Noise. Learn about Atlanta and the stories that Amir and I are talking about now in today's episode. Listen to the production and learn about hip hop production and what a real producer does, because in this film, he takes a moment and he describes how Waterfalls came together. Rico does this. And he says, you know, you over there, you over here, I want you to do this, I want you to do that. And he's produced. And it's fantastic. You see the brilliance of this man and you realize exactly what the Dungeon Family lost, what Atlanta lost, and what hip hop lost in this man, Rico Wade, that you may or may not have heard of. So even today, right now, I still say I'm trying to get paid like Rico Wade. So, you know, shout out to everybody listening in the A. You know, it's a West Coaster over here that appreciates the talent that y'all got over there. You know, and, you know, my thoughts is with everybody connected to this. So we'll leave it right there. With that in mind, as always, I'd like to thank you for your insight and your contributions to our episode today. Once again, today's guest is the author of the book Trap History and the executive editor of Atlanta Daily World, Mr. A.R. Shaw. Do me a favor before we go. Hit that interview one more time and let everybody know your social media.
Definitely. This week, you can check out the interview one-on-one with Chris Webber. He talks about his new book, Fab Five, and also Andrew Reese has some interesting comments. You can check it out on Atlanta Daily World, Michigan Chronicle, Chicago Defender, New Pittsburgh Courier. And you can follow me, ARShaw23, on Instagram.
This has been a production of the Black Information Network. Today's show was produced by Chris Thompson. Have some thoughts you'd like to share? Use the red microphone talkback feature on the iHeartRadio app. While you're there, be sure to hit subscribe and download all of our episodes. I am your host, Ramses Ja, on all social media. And join us tomorrow as we share our news with our voice. from our perspective, right here on the Black Information Network Daily Podcast.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Tura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.